You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
So, what are you guys going to do? You're going to continue to be a bunch of soft, underperforming, tattooed millionaires?
They said all along, we're not, the perfection is not possible. We just want to get the big decisions right.
What are we doing? What are we doing?
Green room getting hot.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
The right answer was a goal in Times Square so we could do butts up, but that was an easy one.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental and MLSsoccer.com. I am Andrew Wiebe in the green room. Matt Doyle is still sipping cocktails in Cabo, so Bobby Warshaw joins us, and as always, David Goss, it's the beginning of something very special, guys. But what is that? Do you know? Is it on the tip of your tongue? Can you answer this?
Is it National Sauerkraut Week?
That is very special. That is very special. I will give you that. That I did not expect you to say. I don't know if it is.
I don't
sauerkraut
know if that's
week.
True. I just
do
guessed.
You like National Sauerkraut Week more than National Mushroom Week?
Yeah.
Really?
Mushrooms? In your food rankings, sauerkraut is above mushrooms?
Anything that has vinegar in it is better than anything else.
Okay.
Yeah, but so not if that else is sauteed mushrooms.
Oh, you didn't say sauteed.
It's a given.
Well, it's mushrooms in any form, I think. Also, sauerkraut in any form, although it really just has its one form, which makes it a lesser food. We will not digress. It is Heineken Rivalry Week. There is soccer every single day from Wednesday through Sunday this week. NYCFC and New York, the New York Derby, the rubber match this season. Both teams have won one, I guess two for the Red Bulls if you count the Open Cup. It goes down on Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern on FS1. Extra Time Live, driven by Continental, will be there. We've got the pregame show for you. Well, the pregame show? There's not a technical term for this. 6:30 p.m. Eastern. David Goss roaming around outside Yankee Stadium with the people where you belong.
Shoot me a tweet if you're going to be in the area.
Yeah?
Yeah, I'm going to be hanging out outside trying to, you know, grab some interviews, see some fun stuff.
Yeah, so if you see cameras following around a very sweaty person.
Yeah.
That is the
But
set.
Also someone who looks like they're in their native environment.
Exactly.
Because I'm in my hometown, baby. Last Boom. Time ever. I'm excited about
so
that.
So 6:30 p.m. Eastern, Facebook, Periscope on Twitter, MLSsoccer.com. We'll send you all the information there. Check that out. Thursday, Houston, Dallas, 9 Eastern, Unimas. And it's also live on Twitter. So you can watch that one for free. So check that one out. Friday, Orlando, Atlanta, LA, LAFC, 8 p.m., 10:30 p.m., ESPN on the both of them. And Saturday, Toronto, Montreal, Colorado, RSL, TVAS, ESPN Plus, Sundays, Red Bulls, DC, Portland, Seattle. We'll talk about those on Thursday. My issue here is that I'm leaving Friday morning to go to California. I have baby showers. I have my not in-laws, not quite lawfully yet.
Nice.
I have many family things to do, and I have this slate of games. So how do I do it? Do I watch on my phone underneath the table? Do I ask them to put the game on in the middle of a family gathering in a family that's a baseball, football, basketball family? Don't really get my soccer obsession family? Or do I use this as a teaching moment and try to bring, all these fine folks into my world for just a little bit? How would you handle this? As you say, Dave, this is a live therapy session.
Yeah, as usual, Weeby. It's a tough one. I get that they're no soccer family, and that's always like a bit awkward when you have to be like, hey, can we put on like the soccer game?
Right, and it's not just that, because once it's on, maybe this is a good way to facilitate conversation because they're going to ask me a lot of questions. But I'm going to be in like basically MLS 101 where I'm like probably going down the rabbit hole. This is Tam. This is that. This is the other. Yep. This is just the rules of soccer.
Yeah, we should probably talk to you about how you introduce people to MLS, because if you're talking about Tam in the first conversation, you're off base already.
If you don't want to go deep, don't even start with me.
That's interesting. I actually think that some people would like to get straight into those quirky business rules. Like, that might be a better in than talking about the tactics or the personalities.
It's probably not my soon-to-be aunts, though.
Fair.
If you've got advice, let us know. Thursday, we'll cover that. But, of course, the games are going down. We'll talk NYCFC New York in just a little bit. But there was so much action in Week 25. We cannot waste another second here with my personal life. Joseph Martinez, 27 goals. It's now a four-man record. Roy Lassiter, of course, 96. Chris Wondolowski, BWP. Now Joseph Martinez. He has tied it in August. He has two more months of the season to go to score just one goal to be the all-time record holder, which, of course, he will do. We've talked on this show before about where he might end up. I think I netted out at 32, just a number I pulled out of nowhere. Atlanta United also moving to the Supporters' Shield lead by beating Columbus Crew FC 3-1, a controversial win. Crew FC fans all up in our mentions, Bobby, because we do instant replay about that Jeff Reynolds handball.
Mm-hmm.
I think we both agree that it's a handball. What do you make of that, Dave? Because it hits his arm, he clears it, and Tito Villalba goes the entire length of the field to score the goal that makes it 2-1, and then Crew FC lose 3-1.
I thought the two refereeing experts here, Pro and Pro 2, were going to take care of that.
Hey, let me teach you something about instant replay and talking about the plays. There are no rules in soccer, Dave, so every time a play comes up, you just make it up.
So I can just say whatever I want.
Yeah, just because in the same way that referees just do whatever they want.
Bobby, if you allow Bobby every single week, just he wants to, he's got a crusade that will never end.
I'm on a crusade to just make some norms and general precedents so that every game, when you see the same play, it's not called differently. This seems very simple to me. Everything else in the world has norms and mores and precedents except soccer refereeing for some reason.
Handball or no?
Yeah, I say handball. Or what did you guys say?
We said handball.
Both of you.
Because it looks to me like Lerowitz's arm is behind him, and he knows the cross is coming. And as Miram strikes the ball, he shifts his weight, which I get. I understand that. But his arm comes out, and it is a little bit away from the body. I know it's down, but it's not, like, directly by his side.
Why are we talking about this on ETR?
Right, I don't know. That's a good point. Look, it was 3-1. Joseph Martinez won. Chrissy fans are salty about it. So is Greg Berhalter, understandably so. But Atlanta United, top of the Supporters' Shield race. 51 points, 3 ahead of the Red Bulls, just a smidge more on the Red Bulls in points per game. But they only have 3 home games remaining, and 4 of their next 5, I think, is on the road. It's a tough stretch for Atlanta.
No,
it's a
4
tough stretch.
Straight, 5 of 6.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay, so it's a tough stretch, not just now, but for the Supporters' Shield. Red Bulls right behind them, 48 points. They drew in Vancouver. Last-second goal from Danny Royer got this thing done. Kendall Wasson with a couple dunks on Tim Parker, which is kind of surprising.
Are we not going to talk about Atlanta for a second?
We will. Give me 1 second.
Okay.
New York City FC, 47 points, just behind there as well, and then Dallas on 45. So probably it's a 4-team race. Realistically, it's a 4-team race. Unless we think the Sounders are going to win every game from here on out, and then maybe they might push their way in. How about it? Atlanta.
Did you just put the Sounders in?
It was a joke. It was just a troll Sounders fan. I'm sorry.
David mentioned in the office, and there's a general rule around here that if you're willing to say it in the bullpen in the office, you got to be able to say it on ETR. It's called the Ben Bear rule. Okay?
Why doesn't Ben Bear follow that rule then?
And you mentioned that you actually don't think that Atlanta has the bona fides to win enough games in the playoffs.
Oh, so you prefaced that whole thing to then challenge me to say my own thing.
Right. You didn't know
I thought you were about to admit something.
No, that's where it was going the whole time. I knew what this was. It was you were being put on the spot.
What did I say?
You said that you didn't think that Atlanta had what it took to win in the playoffs. What it takes to win in the playoffs?
Yeah, I said that right now I would still bet against that team being able to play to win in tight games 3 rounds in MLS Cup. So what I said was, if you think back to last year, Toronto's run and how tough it was, because I think about how they gutted out that game against the Red Bulls, how they survived against Crew SC, and then I think they outplayed Seattle pretty handily. But the year before, they couldn't get a goal against Seattle. Seattle didn't have a shot on goal. Like, they're not easy wins. They're not open field games. Even last year against Crew SC for Atlanta in the playoffs, it was a pretty open game, and they couldn't score a goal. I'm not saying that they can't win MLS Cup. I'm just saying the way teams are built that do win MLS Cup are not normally how Atlanta United seems to play.
Do you think that their defense is good enough with a Chris McCann at left back and a wandering LGP at center back?
That would be my biggest question mark. It wouldn't be the attack. It would be that back line.
And I actually put it on the outside backs more than I put on LGP. I think centrally they're pretty good. LGP, Parkhurst, unless one of those guys gets hurt, I don't have an issue with the central defenders. It's Franco Escobar and it's Chris McCann. And it's if you get against elite wingers, elite 1v1 players, which there are many in the Eastern Conference, or you say, these guys, we want your build-up to come through them. Forget Parkhurst distributing in the middle. Forget LGP with those big switches. Both those guys are great on the ball. And if they're the ones initiating the build-up, I think you're really happy if you're Tata and Atlanta United fans. It's if those two outside backs are forced into positions that they're not comfortable in, whether 1v1 defending or dictating play, I think then Atlanta are in trouble, because their whole thing is either getting into transition, getting Almiron in the pocket to turn, or getting some sort of special play from those outside players, whether it's Gressel, whether it's Villalba, whether it's Barco, even though nobody passes to him. And then at the end of that, Joseph Martinez doing the obvious.
So you went there. You brought up Barco.
Wait, I'm just going to say, this is one of those things that Atlanta United fans rightfully are going to yell at me about
and say we're
one of the best defenses in the league. 2 years ago, we had this conversation about Red Bulls going into the playoffs against Montreal, where we were like, I don't know if they can score goals, and they were the best attack in the league, and then they fell apart. The playoffs are a completely different game than the regular season. Unfortunately, we don't have any track record on these Atlanta players in the playoffs. Obviously, one game last year. And so it's kind of a hypothetical conversation until we get into those moments.
Now, I want to go back to Barco. We mentioned, or I think I specifically said, that I didn't think Barco deserved to be in the first 11, and Atlanta fans ripped into me. I'd be curious to know if Atlanta fans feel differently now that they've seen their team play the last 3 weeks, especially yesterday. With Tito Villalba on one side and Julian Gressel on the other, that looked like a pretty darn good attack, and I wonder if there's a place for Barco.
If Tito Villalba is healthy, and we've been talking top five wingers in the league, he did not make my top five wingers because he has not been playing enough this year, and therefore his production wasn't there. But if he is healthy and playing and confident, he is easily in the top five. And not just because of the 1v1 ability, but like the energy he puts into a game, it's not just going one way. Last year he tracked back, like Assad did, and was very good recovering and then springing that attack. And he has a different sort of chemistry with Joseph Martinez than anybody else on that team, other than maybe Gressel this year. And that's just because Gressel in that early ball was made for Joseph Martinez. But Gressel, 6 assists directly to Joseph, 5 assists directly to Joseph this year from Tito Villalba.
That's a good stat, dude.
Boom.
That's good work. Yeah, you just made the case for Villalba. I just don't know how you watch this Atlanta team and think that Gressel is not one of the most important players in that attack. For his all-around game, for his defensive ability, for his ability in possession, not just assists, but if you look at that Joseph goal yesterday, look at Gressel's run off the ball to open up space. Gressel does stuff like that all game, and maybe Barco is individually more talented than Gressel, but if you look at the full thing that that Atlanta attack is, Gressel is so important to what they do, and I don't know how you take him off the field.
Barco is also 7 years younger, right? So, like, he's...
Yeah, but this is what we're missing, right? There's this big picture of what Atlanta might do long-term, whether it's selling players, whether it's moving players on to make money, but they want to win now. Because do any of us see a scenario where both Almiron and Joseph are back next year? So as much as they want to make money on these players selling them, they also are in win-now mode and will play the best 11 to win now.
And if those guys get sold, then Barco gets, if not the keys, then close to it. And he has an opportunity to be that special player with a little bit of time to integrate. So Atlanta, a big win. Chrissy fans rightfully are going to be upset about this. I think it's a PK. Jesse Zardes, 15 goals. Congratulations to him in this match. Well done.
We had a question in the mailbag, but I was just going to pull it up here because we just talked about this. You had your guys that made the leap. Article is Gressel.
Gressel just fell right outside of that, and mostly because I felt like he made the leap last year in the sense that he proved he was an integral player for this team, an elite team. He proved that he could be productive, goals, assists, and be a guy within that system that could do it in multiple positions. So to me, this year was just natural progression of more of the same. I knew he had the ability to do all these things. He's continued doing them. For me, there is a leap there. I just wanted to point out some lesser known ones. All right, let's talk Supporter Shield real quick before we get to Senior Wayne and DC rolling, the Western Conference going absolutely crazy, and Bobby getting 2 coaching shout-outs in one weekend. Can Atlanta United win the Shield? Is that in their fate because they have fewer home games? We know how good they are at home, but they've actually been very good on the road. Or is this Red Bulls, NYCFC, or maybe even FC Dallas in the conversation? Who would you say, right now, your personal dinero on the line, wins this thing?
I'll take Atlanta. They absolutely can. I don't really know for sure, but if you're going to ask me who I would bet on, I'd take Atlanta.
Why?
I do just think they're the best team right now. I think you guys both make good points about their ability to win in the playoffs over multiple games, but if you just look at their consistency, MLS game to MLS game, and the number of ways they can beat you and the number of ways they can score goals – I would take Atlanta to win the most games over the next 9 to 12.
And for Atlanta, you said so 6 away games, which is the most, and 3 home. But they have the best away record in the league by far. They have 7 wins on the road. So it's like kind of a tough thing to juggle. NYCFC probably has the easiest schedule coming in here. They're a little bit behind right now on 47 points, 1.88 per game.
But probably the worst form.
And I think Red Bulls are the best team of the three. So that's my way
Give
of saying
Give me the pitch that Red
know.
Bulls are the best team.
I think from front to back, they're the most complete team. I don't think there's a hole in any part of their – I think their center backs are good. Obviously, Robles is a super solid, if not in this league, great goalkeeper. Davis and Adams are both good players, and they know their roles and understand their space. And BWP is one of the best forwards in the league. So from a spine perspective, they're one of the best. From an identity perspective, I understand it changes a bit with Armas, but they're a team coming down the stretch that has the most familiarity with each other.
When I watch them play Atlanta, NYCFC, with these top teams,
yeah.
they dominate them. Mm-hmm. They are unreal to watch. When I watch them play everyone else, I'm like, is that really a first-place team? They get results, and yes, they did win 8 of 10 before faltering in Vancouver, but just watching them play, they don't look as dominant in the non-big
the
games.
The way they play is affected by the way the other team plays, and when they play Chicago... Chicago's not trying to play on the ball or against Atlanta where they play in transition and then the Red Bulls feel comfortable the other way. The Red Bulls can't choose the way a game is played. So when they play a team that's lower down in this league...
Who doesn't try and pass, who doesn't try and
exactly,
keep the ball.
Then it affects the way Red Bulls play. What is noticeable is that they're winning those games this year. And that, to me, comes down a lot to Kaku.
Okay.
And Royer understanding his role even better and just being healthy, right? Okay. Last year, he was July player of the year, and then he missed 2 months.
Yep.
Something like that. Mm-hmm. And so now he's not missing those 2 months, and he's still in there.
I'm on the Red Bulls bandwagon, by the way, for the Supporters Shield this year.
Yeah.
I'm with Dave on that. I just think the balance that they have, you know, their only weak spot is that they are reliant on what it is the other team comes out and does. It's because they're not necessarily dictating play in the way where they say, we don't care how you play. We're going to do what we do, kind of like NYCFC do, in a way the way Atlanta do with the counterattack. But I still think they'll get it. I just think overall they've got the best balance of any team out there. Atlanta fans, you might not be happy.
They also, by the way, the only one that – they play NYCFC and Atlanta. So they also control, quote-unquote, more of their destiny than the other two.
Can I make one more point about Red Bulls?
Uh-huh.
If soccer is a weak link sport,
yeah.
Do we think that, and I feel somewhat guilty saying this, but I think it's also somewhat true, is that if they start a guy like Alex Moyle, who is a very good soccer player, but maybe not as good as the other players on these top teams, as the Jesus Medina, Maxi Morales, Tito Villalba, does that hurt Red Bulls?
No, because the other team's weakest links are, first of all, on the back line. So I'd rather have my weak link out on the wing than on the back line, which can hurt you more.
Mm-hmm.
And two, their system creates a space where that quote-unquote weak link can be utilized better, right? They put Muriel out there with specific roles and jobs that he needs to carry out, and the team is better off for it.
Right. He's a weak link if you're saying, hey, Alex, go 1v1 with somebody. Hey,
yeah,
Alex,
create for
go,
us.
Yeah, go
right.
be the difference maker in the 18-yard box. You're not saying that to him. You're saying put other players under pressure, make simple passes, get the ball on Kaku's foot immediately when you win it back, or play forward immediately, and let's see what BWP and Royer can do.
And cover for your fullback who's going to attack as well. So that's why I think they're able to cover up that a little bit more. So Velo was a loss, but I think if any team can cover something like that, it's this Red Bull squad.
Whitecaps did have a little they showed a weakness on set pieces,
yeah.
I think, this weekend.
Not that everyone has a Kendall Waston.
Correct. Very few people do have a Kendall Waston, but the idea that you jam everybody up on the goalkeeper, Robles can't come claim the ball, and then if you have one dominant force, it could work. We'll see what happens.
And Matt wanted me to point out the Red Bulls went zonal on their corners this week, which they hadn't done under Jesse. It's something a little bit new, and it clearly didn't work out.
Are we not even talking about FC Dallas? Because none of us.
I was literally just going to ask that question, because FC Dallas fans are hearing this conversation and they're hacked off about it.
Yeah,
because we've heard from them on Twitter. They're saying, well, "Wait, you guys still not giving us the credit that we deserve?" They endured a long rain delay down there in Texas. They came out on the other end of it, and they beat Minnesota, which, you know, you beat Minnesota at home.
No Darwin
That's
Quintero.
Like a check mark.
With no
just,
Darwin
just
Quintero.
Just check it off. Just check that one off. Two kind of not fluky goals. I think the Minor Figueroa one is a little bit fluky because it's a clearance
so
header
awkward,
off the post.
Yeah. But they were going to find a win. Dallas was always going to win
were,
that game.
They were. But that is kind of where they're at right now, where they're going to find a win, and they're getting the points.
Aranguiz looks good.
That's what I was about to say. But nobody generally wows you.
He does.
But Aranguiz it looks like a very good buy.
And he's like, he's comfortable on the ball. He's tricky. He seems to have a good sense of where his teammates are. He's also really quick. And to me, in this league, you need to have speed. Because you need to, when you're able to beat someone or break away, continue that. My big one is Tomas Martinez.
It's not just in this league. If you want to be an attacking player anywhere in the world, you have to have a burst. You have to be fast.
Right.
You need to be able to create separation. But I would say Juan Mata is the only attacking player in the world who can play at that level currently.
I was about to say, don't forget Riquelme.
Right. But the game's changed since then. Yeah. But, yeah, you need a burst.
Yeah,
I would argue Riquelme created those angles and spaces to play the passes he did and do the things he did with his mind and, like, his technical ability as opposed to that, like, 4-5-step boom.
But still, once you beat someone on the dribble, you can't just have them recover immediately against you, which the players – or maybe they use their body well to keep themselves
or you're passing it and you got the movement
and
your body.
Yeah, the flip to that is when the burst goes for a guy like Kaká, you're no longer the same player.
Right, yeah.
But,
And Aranguiz has that. And so they can find a way to get him like really going over these last few months, maybe, but I think it's more playoffs for them because it's going to take a little bit of time with him. There's no way he's going to become a dominant. Nico Lodero came in and did that. Otherwise it doesn't happen in MLS. It's too hard.
To me, they have a lot of maybes on the attacking front when it comes to impacting games in a consistent manner.
Well, like Mikey Barrios, right? How much have people trashed on Mikey Barrios? And now I think he's got like 4 goals in a month or something like that. He had one again in this one from outside the box. And like this is a dude that people were saying, what's he doing on the field?
Should have sold him.
Yeah. Rightfully so. What do you mean? Don't act like that wasn't the right
thing
to say for the past year.
But that's what I'm saying. When I say a bunch of maybes, Dambaji, a maybe. Ruti, a maybe.
Yeah.
Coman, a never at this point. You go down that list of like attacking players, difference makers. You know, Mosquera, a maybe. Tesho, a maybe.
Dallas
a maybe. It's never – you don't – when you watch a game, you don't see them go out there and be like, he's going to make a difference.
Convincing
today.
Is the word I would use. They haven't been as convincing as Red Bulls and Atlanta and NYCFC at least were.
All right, let's dig a little deeper into the Western Conference, but we'll do that right after Senior Wayne because DC United just keep on rolling. This is what they do right now. 1-0 win against the Revs. Lucho Acosta gets another goal, a nice little finish at the back post. He roofs this one. DC had a ton of opportunities. Wayne Rooney had a good number of opportunities. They gutted it out. They gutted it out, and I think the Revs are done and dusted.
I'm sorry.
It's over.
I got to ask, in our rundown, did you put your own tweet in the rundown?
I did because it was supposed to spark a conversation, which was if Lucho finishes with, let's say, 10 and 15, would he be a legitimate MVP candidate?
Also, people, if you want, you can follow at Andrew_Weavy.
Yeah, for all the good stuff.
Yeah.
All the great takes.
Would Lucho Acosta be in the MVP conversation?
Does Lucho Acosta have a path to being, let's say, a top 3 MVP candidate? Josef Martinez will be there. If the Red Bulls win Shield like we're saying they might, which we've obviously jinxed it, BWP, I think, would have to be there. Maybe Kaku, but they might split it, as has happened with Sasha and BWP in the past. But Acosta gets 10 and 15, and they make the playoffs. He's going to be in that conversation. He's going to be right there.
Is Maxi Morales in that conversation?
I think he was. I think it's faded a little
because
bit
because the
right
team
now.
Has faded.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
But that matters.
So Joseph's 100% in the convo, and then probably one of
– Joseph is the convo.
Right. Joseph is the convo.
And then whoever from New York, if either New York team wins Supporters Shield, probably –
their most
Morales.
Player,
the answer,
Kaku,
the answer to Lucho is no. I understand what you're saying. It's a worthwhile point, but Lucho is playing this well because of Wayne Rooney, or at least Rooney's whatever contribution he's made to this team. So I don't want to make Lucho league MVP when he's not even team MVP.
Well, that's the problem though. Is Wayne comes in? Wayne, me and him are just first name is. He comes in late in the season, so he can't win it. Right. So now Lucho's the best player over the course of the season for a team. I don't know. I'm not saying he was great before Rooney got there, but like at least he played the full year in the league, right?
If he does that, that will mean he will have scored 5 goals and had 5 more assists the rest of the way, which is perfectly doable right now, the way he's playing, the way DC United are playing. They look good. They just didn't finish last night. Rooney had a couple opportunities to get it done. This team is going to make the playoffs, and I'm fully convinced of it at this point. Like, eighth place, 27 points. They're 6 points behind the Impact. Impact with an incredible win against Chicago, and by incredible, I mean not like beautiful or awe-inspiring, but incredible because it was a late goal that they absolutely needed. I think Daniel Lovitz is first in MLS. But I just feel like it's inevitable at this point. Wayne Rooney, Lucho Costa on a tear, Audi Field going crazy, a younger, more vibrant DC team. They're going to make the playoffs. At least I hope they do. I feel like they're the RSL of this year.
Wow. We're here for RSL.
Everybody falls in love with them. You know what I mean? Like,
by the way,
the way
Bobby
they play,
shook his
things
head.
Things change. Yeah, he didn't like that take.
Bobby just decides to step out every once
in a
while.
It's an audio medium, and Bobby will be like, no, not me.
Yeah.
I made a crazy face, and I might have something good on this side, but not me. DC United, right there.
So the Revs are done.
Yeah, the Revs are done.
They also have six of their next eight on the road.
Yeah,
that's why they're done. Because, also, by the way, they have now lost five of their last six. They haven't won since beating DC United back on June 30th.
And they seem to have lost their identity. They didn't even press DC in the first half last night. It didn't seem to be from Brad Friedel's instruction. They were just like too tired or didn't feel up for it or too flummoxed. So, yeah, especially considering the fact that they lost their go-to number one thing they were actually good at, Revs cooked.
I love it.
Western Conference grab bag here. You can take whatever you want. Seattle Sounders, 5-0 against LA Galaxy.
I already know mine.
Five big-time LA Galaxy players out in this one. Zlatan, the Dos Santi, Alessandrini, Siani. It depends on what you think about Siani.
30 of their 48 time. Goals this scored this
year. A lot
year.
Of goals gone. LAFC, just keep rolling along. Beat the Rapids late Sunday night. Maybe you were watching on ESPN.
Bobby wants in.
Did that LAFC game seem boring to you? And the only reason I say that is because we were stoked. It was the New Age Rapids versus LAFC, two teams that want to be on the ball. They want to play attractive soccer.
Man, that Rapids rebrand happened quick.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm here for it.
It happened really
quick. I'm driving.
It was like the Dower Rapids for the better part of 5 months, and now it's the New Age Rapids.
Yeah, I'm here for it, by the way. I mean, if they wanted to totally rebrand, I'd help them make that crest and everything.
Yeah, you know, New Age team that starts Tommy Smith and Danny Wilson.
Yeah, so I actually texted. I slacked that.
And Jack
Paul
McBean.
Wilson.
And
if you,
Jack
Paul Wilson, get your Champo players.
If you
give them a true six, the Rapids. I don't know how we just made this a Rapids conversation, but you give them a true six, it's a playoff team. If you give them a true
that
six and move Jack Price,
you sure you aren't on that New Age medicine, Bobby?
Move Jack Price up higher, then you find a passing center back who can actually do something with the ball, especially in a diamond formation. Then all of a sudden, it's a team that might not just be a six seed, and you give them a forward, and that's like a real team.
So two transfer windows, and definitely the Rapids are
six
maybe
or
a
$7 million. Okay, LAFC though.
Mad investment here.
LAFC, they just weren't as exciting, or they haven't been for a few weeks. And yes, the Open Cup run, losing Marc-Anthony Kaye. Okay, I don't know why I said that. But they just haven't been as exciting as they were to start the year. And I feel bad saying that because they're an expansion team and they were so amazing. But I'm still a little bummed that they haven't been as fun to watch.
Lee Wynn with an incredible goal in this game. That was exciting.
Yeah.
The amount of skill he has on the ball to be playing where he is. I mean, it just him and Benny back there dictating and conducting is such a –
But it's not conducting.
One,
but
wonderful
thing. I know that like we think that when we think of them on the ball, but it hasn't been beautiful and they haven't been conducting.
Well,
it's
not
been
saying
slow.
It's, final
it's been stagnant. But I don't want them to play final balls. I want them to do what I've been waiting for them to do their whole careers: is just be facilitators,
just
get on the
possession.
Ball, give on the ball. But you don't just cycle possession, right? Because the thing is, you could get a mediocre player out there to cycle possession. That's an average thing. But the thing about Benny and Lee is they're supposed to do it with rhythm. And when I say that is they're supposed to get the ball and pass it on the move. They're supposed to go slow, 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 fast, break the lines. And right now it just looks like the same speed over and over. There's not actually any change of tempo or direction that breaks teams down in the way that the way that style demands.
I thought the move to put Danilo in the back line really worked. He looked good in this game.
Yeah. I have my West thing. This isn't my West thing.
Oh, okay. Sorry. What's your West thing? Because there's other options here. Sporting KC,
3-0
against the Timbers.
Well, yeah, but the Timbers didn't really play a first team, so that kind of killed that one. Albert Rusnak, dude.
Well, they played a first team. They just didn't play Tehran, which is basically it.
Albert Rusnak made history. Equalizer and winner in stoppage time. Yep. 99th minute winner.
Houston basically, I mean, they're
didn't
just
deserve
like,
the
yeah,
win.
They've just, been, they've just got a bunch of gut punches this season. It's over for them, too. If you're saying that the Revs are done, Houston are definitely done. Chicago are for sure done. And we'll get to Veljko Panovic's we're just going to play that to end this segment, I think.
Are you allowed to play it?
Yeah, we put some bleeps on it.
Okay.
Yeah, it's been added.
We bleeped that thing up. But yeah, this Arsenal had to win this game or at least like show something here, and they barely did, by the way.
I think in the 92nd minute, they went from 8th to 4th in the Western Conference.
It was that's the Western Conference in a nutshell right now.
And then they end the weekend in 4th. That is crazy.
It's nuts.
Say what you said earlier about there. They were in 8th place in the 90s.
That's what I just said.
Oh.
They were in 8th place in the 92nd minute, and then in the 99th minute, they were in 4th
place. Do we have more to say about the Seattle Sounders or LA Galaxy? I mean, what does this game really tell us?
Did I just tell you to say what you already just said?
Exactly.
What was I doing while I was staring
at
you?
That's a great question.
Was I not listening to what you were saying, even though I was looking at you?
There's a lot of questions that we
You were probably thinking about your touch to save Domi Torrent earlier today and
that's actually,
feeling like you're back in
yeah,
the
if I'm being honest,
the game.
That's literally exactly
Two
what
touches
I was thinking
on the
about.
NYCFC training field Bobby had, and he walked out of there just glowing. He was like,
because they were both great touches.
You know what, though? I feel good about that because when we were doing interviews with NYCFC, I look over and they have the full benches with the, like, covers, and Bobby sitting by himself middle of the bench just wishing he was out there doing shooting drills.
Yeah,
and I felt my heart broke for Bobby.
Like,
in that
I would
moment.
Be the last player on this training field.
Yo, none of them stayed after.
Who was the last one to come
off? I was
off?
So mad.
Who was the last one to come off?
Joe Scally and Caldwell, the rookie goalkeeper.
You got to like that. The young guy's putting in a little bit of extra work.
No, for sure. The one that, I mean, maybe there's some rule since they have the big game on Wednesday that they don't stay after, but there's ways to break those rules, you know? Maybe just play a little two-touch. Coach, just one more game, just one more game. Yeah, I was a little disappointed that some of their younger players didn't stay after.
Did we learn anything from Seattle Galaxy?
No.
No?
I'm going to agree with that.
I'm going to keep on getting crushed for saying that I don't know if I like Seattle yet after they won 5-0, but they beat a team that you should beat 5-0, and that team also gave them 3.5 goals.
Oh, don't worry. We've got clips to crush you.
Yeah. It's embarrassing. Do we want to play? No, we're not going to play the Schmetzer clip, but apparently Schmetzer's been paying
attention. I have the clip.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
All right, let's play the Schmetzer clip right now.
I'll let Bobby and some of the smart guys there, they can figure out what our team is all about. I know what our team is all about.
That was one of two shout-outs. We'll get to the Jim Curtin one in a second. How do you feel about this, Bobby? You becoming potentially a talking point among MLS head coaches on the dais.
It makes me uncomfortable. It makes me nervous. But at the end of the day, I felt good about the Seattle. I think it was a good article. I thought that I put decent reason and logic into it. And
Here's the thing about Seattle right now. They don't have, other than Chad Marshall and Nico Lodero and kind of individual like attributes, a larger piece that's super coherent and understandable, like the Red Bulls, where you say, okay, this is style. We know how this applies to other teams. We can kind of chart how this will work against this opponent, that opponent. Seattle just have some really good players in some really important positions that generally make the difference when they're healthy, when everybody else around them is clicking. Playoff Chad Marshall, you'll probably make MLS Cup.
Okay, so this is why, yeah, seriously. That's
honestly,
literally, if you have, if you have an above-average center back in this league right now, you probably make the MLS playoffs. But listen, the reason I feel so stringent on holding Seattle accountable or all teams accountable for the way they're playing, the reason I liked Philadelphia, because I truly think to move soccer forward in this country, we have to hold people accountable and hold teams accountable for how they play the game. And it's not just about winning and losing. Yes, that's very important, especially since we've learned with American soccer that sometimes you have to find a way to win. But sometimes you also just have to find ways to do the process right and to play good soccer. And listen, maybe the Sounders are doing it, but I don't see it. And I have no problem holding a team accountable if we feel like they just aren't playing good soccer.
You do think the Union are, though, when they won 2-0 against NYCFC, a huge win. Is their first, I'm going to say, good win. Good win's not the right word, but it is definitely the first win against an elite team this season in Major League Soccer. They had a win against Montreal and RSL. Those are the only other two current playoff teams they had beaten so far. And afterwards, Jim Curtin threw it back to the one true believer.
Overall, I think that you get rewarded when your team is brave. And the way that our guys actually pass the ball, too, there's something to be said about that. There's a couple sequences. I'm sure somebody will clip it out. Warshaw likes us right now, so he'll probably have something on it. But he's giving us some love.
Bobby! How do you like that? The Union and Bobby Warshaw. It's a match made in heaven.
Yeah, I just want to you guys to know that you're not welcome aboard this train. You may not board. You may not get food. You may not sit. The train has passed. You cannot be on it.
That's fine.
What part of the train? What is this hype train?
Can I be on the Mark McKenzie train, though?
No, you can have none of it.
That's not fair.
Okay, let me check.
Can I ask you where this hype train is going, though? To knockout round exit?
Probably. No, that's okay. Fair. I mean, I do think that there are different types of teams, right? Like, I think the Red Bulls are perfectly built to beat top teams in the playoffs. I actually don't think they're well built for the regular season, even though they've had a good regular season. I think Philadelphia is the opposite. I think they're a good regular season team who, you pointed out, they don't beat good teams. And I don't think that's by accident. I just think they're built not to beat great teams.
Isn't that an issue when
that's the way you want to build your club?
Isn't that a slight problem there? Like, we love the way they play, but that way doesn't beat.
Is that because of the individuals in the squad right now, or is that because of the style they're building? What I'm asking is this an issue because of this year, but it can be expanded later on, or is there a problem?
Tell me which one of these top teams doesn't have a mega superstar in attack. And I think you need a superstar in the attack to win playoff games. And I don't have perfect logic on that.
But if they brought someone in to fit in this system,
so
would the rest of the team or the
David Akam was that guy. I mean, they had David Akam for that reason, to break games open against good teams. When Madunian and Doge Colin Bedoya boss the game, you need someone to just break the game open, and Akam can't do that this year.
Let's say they sign someone like, I don't know, Jay Simpson. What happens? I mean, I'm sorry. That TAM money is just straight down the drain. I didn't know what was happening. I'm just still baffled by that signing. It hurts me to know that they could have had someone better. And this team that I love watching play, thanks to Bobby, I watch all their games now. I mean, it's not that I wouldn't have before, but thanks to Bobby constantly ranting and raving, I'm now a Union stan that can't get on board the hype train. But it's just like there are a couple signings with the margins that they have, which are very, very slender.
Mm-hmm.
That could have elevated them to a point where it might be believable that they could be a playoff impact team. Like Crew SC were last year, for instance. Mm-hmm. The Ola Kamara, the Justin Miram of the world that exist out there that can be had.
Is there Giassi Zardes in this league right now, Giassi Zardes type signing, that they could go out and get because they would overvalue him or he would fit better in their system? Do you understand what I'm asking? Like
somebody
what Crew just did with Zardes, where he's the guy who fits for them and maybe he wasn't a perfect fit for LA.
I think it was Sapong and Akam. I think they're exactly what Philadelphia thinks they want, and they just haven't executed or been confident this year.
Yeah.
And I do think that Corey Burke fits his team really well. Maybe not a great overall soccer player, but he makes really hard runs on the box. He's athletic, can get on the end of things, and works hard on defense.
San Jose, Toronto FC 1-1. Do we have anything to say about that? I mean, no Josie Altidore, no difference makers for Toronto. They really just...
Jansen scored? Is that where you say that?
Yeah, he did. First goal for them. They just didn't... I don't know. As convinced as I was and want to be that they're going to be in the playoffs because they have the talent to be
truly great. Bono's having a bad couple weeks.
He gave
that goal to Wando.
He did.
And in a game where it's like, oh, if we could have snuck out a road win against the worst team in the league without our stars, it would have put them in a much better situation. And guys that are making mistakes they didn't make last year outside of the other players that are missing. That's tough.
I still think they might just run off 10 straight. Josie's back. Mavinga's back. Drew Moore's probably going to start. Like, I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that they just run off 10 straight.
All right. We're going to call it good on week 25. We are going to leave you with Veljko Panovic. This is how bad it's got in Fireland. We'll be right back for Seg 2.
How difficult is this stretch been for you? It must be eating you inside.
Stop asking me those questions. We're suffering, you know. It's difficult for us. So you know, if you want to dug in much, it's weird. It's terrible. It's terrible.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime@mlssoccer.com or tweet at Extra Time Radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Back now on Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental. All of us going to break, and Bobby's just hanging around on the training field. He wants us to take him behind the woodshed for some mediocre takes. Bobby, I appreciate you. What takes were you hoping to be driven back on?
Just all of them. I don't think I actually defended. I don't think I defended anything I said on this show very well yet. I didn't articulate it. I didn't support it. You know, when that happens, I want you guys to hold me accountable. I want you to raise the level.
Okay, well, we've got two more segments to go here, and Ben Bear's going to be here in the third. So you'll have some folks to parse your words very, very soon. Caleb Porter's words got parsed. He sat down with Paul Tenorio in, I think, Hilton Head?
Yeah.
He's hanging out in South Carolina.
I'm going
with his family.
There. In a couple months on vacation.
Hey, man.
Or going through there.
Get some recommendations
from
Caleb.
Yeah, maybe Caleb will.
So a lot of it was about why he left Portland, what's next for him. Basically, he was saying, maybe I didn't have the courage or the wherewithal or what have you to say goodbye to these guys that won me a championship or won us a championship, I should say, in Portland. He also said that he thinks that if the U.S. national team goes American, quote, Peter Vermees, for me, he's the guy that deserves that shot. I believe that. That guy deserves to carry the torch of our national team, Peter Vermees, in my opinion. Based on what he's done in our league, he's proven it as an American coach. If you don't go with Peter Vermees, here comes Caleb. I think, based on what I've proven, I'm in the mix for another two or three guys who deserve consideration, and I'd be open to talking. So Caleb Porter out here stumping for himself. Well done to him, though.
Well done to lock in on
someone
else first.
Dave, if somebody's going to win the lottery, I hope it's you, but really I hope it's me.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying right now.
Yeah. No, that's a really well done way to go about that. And I think in the conversation of U.S. coaches, Caleb Porter is like maybe sixth of who I'd pick. Do we count David Wagner as a U.S. coach right now?
Yeah, I think you'd have to in some ways.
Yeah.
He's not like your MLS base.
Bobby's so upset with me right now.
Sixth?
Caleb Porter?
Yeah.
You think that's too high?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fine. So I would say eighth or ninth.
Who's ahead of him on the MLS ones? Berhalter.
No, hold on. I would say that there's a threshold we could get to where even if you want a U.S. coach from the bottom of your heart, if X number of guys aren't available, you're like, yeah, maybe we should go elsewhere.
Yeah, fully agreed. I would not go eighth on my list. I'm okay with that. But there's Vermees. There's Jesse Vanney. There's Berhalter behind that right now.
I think Porter is a very good coach and good at running an MLS team, but after what happened with the U23s in the Olympics and the way he left Portland in an odd scenario,
I think it actually would go in his favor currently because he would have learned from that, you would hope, and he has talked about that. We've talked to him about that.
Yeah.
So that rather than having no international experience, but Jesse was Bob's assistant, that goes way above that. Greg Berhalter has coached in other countries and played at that level. That goes above that. Mm-hmm. But
Peter Vermees has all those things.
By the way, Bobby, 100% that thing was a catastrophe and that team was completely unprepared. I'm not protecting him from that. I'm just saying I think actually having that experience, failing, and being able to prove in an interview that you learned from it would actually be better than just not having it.
Porter's a good soccer coach. A club would be lucky to have him. He should not be in the conversation for U.S. men's national team.
I'm in on that.
Okay. Where should he be looking for his next opportunity? Because he said, I only want to go to a club that's building something and doing it in the right way, those are cliches, obviously. But we kind of understand what he's talking about there. A club that has a unified vision to go out and accomplish something, has the resources behind that vision, and has a kind of top-to-bottom plan. Now, the question is that academy all the way up to first team? Because he didn't really do that in Portland, and you could say that was the state of their academy at that time. They just didn't have the talent there to promote those players, which, you know, I'm not in the training facility.
How long did he coach Portland? 5 years?
Mm-hmm.
It's a really long time.
Also, I'm a little bit skeptical of his comments about like not being willing to turn the page and like move on from the players that got him there. You know, the Nagbys in case of this year. We're now seeing Giovanni Savarese kind of move on from Liam Ridgewell, which I think has worked out for him.
Adi,
they've obviously moved on from Adi.
Yeah.
He says in his next job, maybe he needs to be more like Peter Vermees and do that. And Vermees has certainly been ruthless with guys that either don't fit the vision, aren't getting it done, or push back against him. Obviously, Graham Zusi, Matt Beisler, Roger Espinoza, those are Vermees guys, and they've stuck around. So it'll be interesting to see at what point does he say, you're not in my plans. Caleb Porter, next job, what could be a good one? Where do you see Caleb Porter? Like, think about expansion. Think about the ideal situation for Caleb Porter to continue his coaching career. He says he has the itch. He had an opportunity in Orlando. He didn't take it.
We talked a bit today with Dami Torrent about what this opportunity meant for him. I don't know how long-term of a solution he is. If he wants to be here for that long, So I would be interested when you hear the comments that Caleb Porter says about the, you know, backing and the structure, especially if he takes over an NYCFC club that maybe has its target date on a new stadium and is changing the essence of their club with that moment of him coming in and doing that. The other big one that would pop out is the Galaxy. For whenever it is that, I mean, Ziggy's the oldest coach, head coach in MLS, whenever it is that he chooses it's done or the Galaxy choose that it's done, those would be the two that would pop out just because what clubs are bigger than what Portland has, you know, in terms of the value in their market. And he won MLS Cup. So, like, he's got to go to a team that in some way he believes he can build something greater than what he built at Portland.
Chris Klein, obviously a guy that he knows well. Indiana University for both of those guys. So we'll see what happens there with Caleb Porter. But I thought interesting comments. There are some rumors out there that David Moyes might be interested in the U.S. national team.
Next.
Bobby? You're a Manchester United fan. You're not jacked up about this?
No, it's not true. There's no chance.
I'd like to state
There's just no chance David Moyes is up for this job.
I'd like to state that I'm also interested in the U.S. national team job. Yeah, I don't know if it's totally right for me right now.
Yeah.
So the rumors might have to slow down, but I'd like to state that David Goss is also interested in the U.S. national team job, but talks are ongoing.
Yeah, next topic.
So definitely need to get that in the Sun, the Independent.
Yeah.
Everybody needs to propagate those rumors, get us some headlines here.
The Daily Mail.
I'm still available, though. David Goss is available for a head coaching position.
I would like all championship teams and League One promotion
thinking about
contenders.
That. And Bobby Warshaw, unconfirmed, may or may not be up to be his top assistant.
Ooh.
So be ready for that one.
That would be interesting.
Is it worrisome to anyone else that there is no U.S. national team head coach and no real credible rumors or rumblings or quotes or anything with substance around this head coaching search? Does that worry anyone? Should it be worrisome to anyone? There are games coming up in September, I believe, against Mexico and Brazil. Looks like Dave Sarakin will coach those. Michael Bradley supposedly in talks with him about what his role might be. We don't know what that is going to be. Any worried? Anybody worried? Because I don't hear anybody talking about this. It just kind of seems to be assumed that we're just going to wait around and something's going to pop out of nowhere and we'll get the right guy. But this is such a big hire, I'm just kind of shocked.
I don't have any sense of what the right guy is. I've thought about this a lot. We've talked about it a lot. I have no sense of what we really need in this moment. And I don't think anybody does. I think anybody that says they do are saying it just because it's fun to talk about it. But the truth is, you know, at the time we thought Bruce was the perfect guy to take over the national team, right? And it just didn't work out. How to predict
perfect
how
perfect guy is tough because he was the best option for what was needed at that time.
I guess my point is that there's so many different ways you can go, and to say that this is the perfect way to go or this is the right choice, I don't think you can reasonably do. So I guess I just don't
care.
So
take it outside of one man and take it into attributes.
Yeah, what do you want?
It's going to be a young team, at least when you hit the next World Cup. Certainly through the cycle, I think you'll have some players that carry over, and maybe some of them, the Yedlins, Josies, whatever of the world, will be able to hold on until that World Cup.
I don't like this exercise either, but you know, I want a coach who's good at working with young players. I want a coach that knows tactics. I want a coach that is charismatic. I want one that looks good in the U.S. polo crest.
I want a coach who has a scouting network that he trusts and is capable of bringing in players that maybe are missed and can build a large network both in the U.S. and American players playing overseas. I'd like more players to get looks over the course of the beginning of this cycle than have gotten looks in the past. And so I want a coach who feels like he can go out and find guys. Obviously, an extent of the Miguel Ibarra, Jurgen Klinsmann thing was like grandstanding and making a point, but also that idea still exists.
So here's my point, right? There's the idea of let's increase the player pool, or let's just pick 25 guys like Iceland did and play them for four straight years and get them to know each other and get them to like each other.
But they don't play them
right
for four straight years. They played them for 20 straight years. They got to know each other from U12 all the way through because it's a country of 300,000
people.
Yeah,
those guys were having snacks after grade school.
Yeah. It's a different it's a different country. It's a different setup. But
what you said there that I completely agree with is like the ability to take a look at your player pool, use the scouting network connections, whatever it is, your own personal, you know, observations to kind of build out this larger player pool, and then have the courage, kind of like you're saying, Bobby, to say, you know what, I've gotten to look at all these guys through our friendlies, through our structure of this year. These are my guys. These are my guys. And if somebody else can push into that, great, but we're probably not going to have wholesale changes between now and, let's say, the meatiest part of qualifying.
And a philosophy where you can say, this is the type of attributes I'm looking for in players, so I bring these guys in, and then an ability to put them in situations where they can play confidently at the top of their levels. And we talked about this a lot with Peru, where like Gareca created a system, but these guys play probably above their abilities as a unit, and that's allowed them to start to build a philosophy or like build a team identity that you can believe in. Jurgen was here, and Bruce was just trying to get results and didn't really have anything. Bob Bradley, though, did that. It wasn't maybe the style that people wanted to see, but that concept is what I would be looking for. So I'd be looking for a coach who came in, one, obviously extremely prepared, understanding the player pool and what the U.S. network looks like and where he's looking for players, because especially if it's a foreign coach. And then two, okay, this is who I am. These are the tenets of how I want to play soccer, because I don't know what 4 years later will look like, but I want to have an idea of how you're going to react to situations and how you're going to try and discuss with your team over the course of these 4 years who they are.
We'll see what happens. Let us know who you want. 401-206-0MLS. Text us, email us, extratimeMLSsoccer.com.
I feel like I could do this. Like, I originally said that I'm not sure if I want to. I said that about 10 minutes ago. But now, unlike David Moyes, I think I might be interested.
Yeah. Dude, I was just thinking about that the whole time. It would be great if you were the manager. I ran training sessions.
Yeah. Yeah, I would just go to the games.
Yeah.
I would just fly to Germany and Mexico and LA all the time and just watch
Manhattan
the players.
Beach, or?
I would definitely learn how to fly a helicopter. Yeah. That's for sure.
So you're the Jurgen, you're the Oyulo?
Yeah.
I'm in for this. Yeah. I'm in for this. Jozy Altidore, before we go to break, rumors, Serie A, League One, these seem real? These seem like contract negotiations? What do these seem like? Toronto FC, if I'm going to sell a player, it's not going to be Jozy Altidore among those big three. It's going to be Sebastian Giovinco, just because his contract situation and
his age.
Yeah. Would not sell Jozy.
Do you want him to go? Do you want to see how Jozy would do in one of those leagues?
That's the question right now. Like, we don't really know exactly what's going to happen.
Forget the facts and the shoulda, woulda.
But as fans, do you want to see Jozy go and score 15 to 20 goals in Serie A or Liga?
So, end of the month, they have. Let's say Toronto FC, they lose. They draw in San Jose, and then let's say they go to Montreal and they lose on the 25th, and then they host Montreal, they lose, then they lose at Portland on the 29th, and you're pushing up against the deadline. Sure, I want to see him in Major League Soccer because I love watching him every single week, but just as like a mental exercise, I would love to see what happened if Jozy went back to a top tier first division team, mid table or wherever it might be. I don't know what clubs would be interested. And tries his hand one more time. I'd love that. Okay. It'd be awesome.
I'm going to raise the stakes in this conversation.
They have to pay him a lot of money.
You wouldn't talk about the coach. I actually don't find the conversation about the coach to be that interesting. The interesting national team conversation I want to talk about is, do the old guard deserve a call-up back in? So if Jozy Altidore is still the best center striker in our player pool, if Michael Bradley is still the best defensive midfielder in our playing pool, and I think if you watched him in that CONCACAF Champions League run, you know that he is, and you know that he is still the most capable of going to Mexico and getting a result. But is it time to just turn the page? And does that change if Jozy Altidore is all of a sudden is playing regularly in La Liga?
I think Josie's there regardless. He's our best center forward. He is a complete difference maker in CONCACAF especially, and he alone could get you qualified in a lot of ways.
You don't feel like we just need to shed everything over the last year?
I think there is a possibility that they would be shed before the World Cup, but I would not throw these young bucks in and just say, hey, it's your team now, go get it done. I feel like it'd be good for them to earn that side of it and not just kind of be like, okay, we're young now.
How about this though, Weeby? They're not going to start qualifying for 2 years, mm-hmm. or now a year,
okay.
right? Over this year, would you call those guys in? Or is it, I'm going to give the young guys a shot, and then when the games get meaningful, then I rely on guys that have been here before?
Well, I think if you're going to have those guys be people that you lean on when it gets meaningful, you have to have some reps with the other guys. It can't just be like, and now we introduce Jozy Altidore to a team that hasn't trained or played with him for the last 3 months. Like, it doesn't work like that, so it's kind of a gradual process. But you may need to message to Jozy and Michael or whoever else gets in here that there may be times where they don't start both games in a window. Like, you know what? You're going to get your start. You're going to start against Mexico or Brazil or whatever. but we're going to give Weah, we're going to give Sargent, we're going to give McKinney, we're going to give Adams. Like, these are our future, and you need to recognize that as well. So both give them the space to succeed and thrive and be confident, but also give them the space just from a playing time level to come in and start to make their own impact and make their own names within this level.
So just in this one conversation, I would say Bradley and Josie are two different stories for me. Their age difference and their role is different. I wouldn't put Bradley in this team right now because he will be the vocal leader, and he's also going to be 35 or 34 at the next World Cup. So I wouldn't want to build anything around him in that situation before I see what I could potentially have without him. For Josie, he's younger, and he is your best center forward, and I think he should be in the team. So those are specifically talking about those two guys.
And we did just preempt just those two, but there's more, right? Jorge Villafania, Omar Gonzalez, Matt Beisler, Graham Zuzi, Alejandro Bedoya, who, yes.
Jeff Cameron.
Like, these are guys, if you watch them on a regular basis, you think to yourself, Alejandro Bedoya might be the best center midfielder in MLS right now, or at least the way he plays it, and he probably deserves a call-up. I just wonder, were there so many bad habits built over the past 2 years, and is the environment so toxic, as we've read from the articles and we've heard through players, that you just need to shed everyone, regardless of ability, and bring in 25 people who knew nothing about the past or the way things used to run?
Maybe. Let us know what you think. Hot Take Hotline is open 24/7. You can email us at any time. We're going to go to break. On the other side, Ben Bear in the mailbag.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Back now on Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental into the mailbag. You know how to get at us, 401-206-0MLS. That's the Hot Take Hotline. If you need help remembering, 401-206-0MLS. Also, Extra Time at MLSsoccer.com. That's the email. What's up, Ben? How's it going?
We literally had someone write a jingle for that number, and yet you refuse to
I don't
use
think it was
it
someone. Wasn't it Alexi
it was
Lala?
Other people also did it.
And I appreciate their jingles. I love their jingles. But everyone has their own way of remembering things. And that jingle for me just sticks. And so I go back to it. If I don't sing it, I often can't remember.
So you're just
not
appreciating Alexi's work.
I appreciate and remember. And, you know, we will begin to use Alexi's work more and more.
I can personally attest Andrew's level of value for things that were done for him for free are not as high as they should be.
Really?
No, I'm just kidding.
What else? I was going to say, give me another example here. Dang.
I mean, I've been working for you for half free for a pretty
long time. Wow. Whoa. We got an email here from Andrew in Crown Heights. I wonder who that could be.
Are we just going to pass over Goss's comment where he said he's been working for
you? Well, I got to walk
guys,
away.
Guys,
from that?
I'm like Josie Altidore and David Moyes. I'm in a contract negotiation with Weeby right now. I'm just trying to spread rumors. I am interested in a few other podcasts in other countries.
Oh, yeah?
But I'm really passionate about the project here.
You really got to challenge yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
If there's not going to be more investment in this project, I'm not sure if it's the right one for me. The problem for you is I'm more like Peter Vermees than Caleb Porter.
Nice.
Hey-o! Andrew in Crown Heights, which MLS team would you choose for a Hard Knocks or Man City all or nothing style in-depth documentary? One, for the playoff run, the rest of the season into the playoffs, the MLS Cup. Two, for the full season next year. We'll start with one. The rest of this season, what teams, locker room, personal lives, et cetera, would you want to embed yourself
in? I think
that's
an easy one.
That's an easy one.
Yeah.
Oh, then go
is
ahead.
Is it? What is it?
DC United?
I'll go Atlanta.
I thought you guys might say L.A. because it might be a tire fire.
Galaxy for the rest of this year, but the full season will be LAFC.
Yeah, I said full season this year would have been LAFC. That would have been pretty easy.
Okay, so they have to be possible. You think there's any chance Bob Bradley lets you stick
a
– He did We Must Go.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be possible. That's your favorite movie
of all time. Movie ever.
This is all pretend because Pep let it happen.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I think this is your only selling point to Bob Bradley, by the way, Pep did it. Well, and you know Caleb Porter's on it then.
We know Dome's open to it, so.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, I watched the first two episodes.
Sell me in Atlanta for the rest of the season.
Well, you mentioned locker room.
Yeah.
I think it's a pretty obvious angle there.
Ooh, bad.
I'm not going to get into it, but yes.
Gotcha.
There's a pretty obvious angle there about why you'd want to be embedded in Atlanta's locker room right now.
I didn't think about that angle, and that's
a solid
angle.
Point. Yeah,
that's a good angle.
Interesting use of words, Ben.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Where are you going, Bobby? You're not going to the Union?
You said LAFC.
No, I'll probably go to Galaxy for the rest of the year.
You know what? Yeah, I'm with you on that one, just because the Zlatan effect is going to get a lot for you. The one we didn't say for the full year for this year, Orlando City, because you come into it, and they're the team that makes all the moves, so you have all the preseason, like, so-and-so, you're on the phone, we made this trade, we're going to be great, and then just flames.
I wouldn't want to get hit by the flying fists, though. That concerns me, you know. I'm just there. I have the camera. I'm taking it in. Next thing I know, someone's fist flies.
Things got a little too
heated. I thought we were going to do some cool, like, virtual graphics where, like, you get, like, it's like a flying fist, like, through the screen.
No, man.
Andrew in Crown Heights, who are you thinking of?
I was going to say LAFC just because, once again, I think there's potential for, like, crackle and pop flames or the potential for Zlatan to do crazy stuff. I think that would have been a great one for the full season, too, because you get the Zlatan signing, the arrival, the derby, everything else from then on out.
Oh, speaking of that, let's jump into the mailbag. I love rivalry, but it hurts my ears to hear you talk about derbies. Even Doyle, who loves to poke fun at the EPL, has succumbed to the influence of the English announcers that he listens to while secretly watching countless London derbies. In America, it is derby. We do not watch the Kentucky Derby, wear derby hats, I don't even know what that is, or watch demolition derbies at the country fair. And Andrew should know that the biggest suburb of Wichita, Kansas, yes, Wichita has a suburb, is not Derby, Kansas. It's Derby. Is that a real place?
That
Derby,
is.
Kansas? Please stop Anglo-posing.
Wow.
It's embarrassing.
That, you know what? This email deserves, if any email has ever deserved a t-shirt,
that's
this
a t-shirt.
One does. So who's it from?
I think it's Matt in Fort Worth.
Matt in Fort Worth, you send us via email or the Hot Tech Hotline your size, your address. Know that you have made me blush because you just absolutely flamed me. And I will not say Derby, the way that I previously said it anymore, Derby, Kansas, is a real place.
Why don't you just call it Derby, Kansas? And then you could just align on that direction with everything.
You know how much I love the EPL and everything to do with English soccer.
And Champo.
I actually, yeah.
I thought you were more of a League Two guy.
Yeah.
Care about Cup.
No, I'm a Champo guy.
John Stone, Pink Cup.
I don't know. Derby sounds better. It just does.
Whoa.
It just
I'm with Ben.
Like, Derby just doesn't sound good. Like,
Ben and Bobby are agreeing on something England-based.
I think you're right. So I'll say Derby.
That's why we
I'll
use
say
it.
Derby, but Weeby. I'll never say Derby because I'll just say rivalry matches now.
Weeby.
But then you'll hate
on
me because
stupid.
You're like, not everything's a rivalry match, and MLS is inventing them. And I don't disagree completely with that sentiment, but
I'm just
Derby
bothered
just
by how
better.
Easily Weeby is.
Swayed?
Like, swayed.
Because it doesn't matter to me. I have no skin in the game, you know? Like, if you want me to say Derby, I'm fine with that.
Can I say something as someone who does announcing? I say whatever comes off your tongue most naturally is what you should say. So
you would say to what naturally?
I don't really know what
I think
comes.
Derby comes off it more naturally. Yeah. Derby is almost like
Hudson River
I'm
Derby.
Thinking of
yeah,
like,
because I'm thinking
like,
of Kentucky Derby when I'm thinking of Derby,
think like
not like a soccer game. I know, like, yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on here.
Ben works for horseracingracing.com on the side from MLSsoccer.com. And so he's got a lot of horse racing in his head. I've never even watched it.
You know
what's
another
derby
underrated use of derby? Pinewood Derby.
What is
that? Like the boxcars?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Is that from a movie or is that like a real thing?
That's from Boy Scouts. It's a real thing.
Oh,
I got third
thing.
Place back in the day with a hot dog car that I carved myself. In case anyone needed
I bet.
To know.
All right. So, Garrett here. With DC United Revolution game going on this weekend, is there any official name for when the original MLS clubs play each other, like the original six in the NHL? Any suggestions for the names? Of the nine teams remaining from that year, do we include the four that have changed its names when we discuss originals, FC Dallas, San Jose, Sporting KC, and Red Bulls?
San Jose is the only one that I feel like has a little bit of a weird mark on them
there.
Because
they changed their team.
Yeah, I mean, the Red Bulls, in a sense, because that was a pretty drastic change to go Red Bulls. I don't have a good name for that, though. I mean, the original six is so good.
Originals Cup.
And
is that what it's called in the NHL?
No, just called.
Oh, you're saying that for this?
That, yeah, for this. You can just
I
call
do
kind
of dig that idea. Over the season, we keep track of the points and award some type of little metaphorical
trophy. We need
trophy.
Another mini cup in MLS.
But this one's actually good. This is like a real one.
Yeah.
That is that
was
what you
call
idea.
It?
And it's head-to-head between those teams.
Yeah,
it's going to be unbalanced,
that's
obviously.
Fair,
but
yeah.
The supporter shield we accept
keep
in that
points.
Form.
Points.
So what would you call it?
I think the Originals Cup is cool.
And would you include
or the 96, like Cup of 96 or something?
Oh, I like that.
96 Cup.
Yeah.
Club 96. I don't know. Do we do an attendance table as well? Just saying.
I don't know. Would you include San Jose?
It almost exactly matches. If you exclude San Jose, then you have 4-4.
In each conference.
Yes. So cool. That'd work out pretty well.
But then you have to exclude San Jose, which I think is kind of – that's pretty rugged.
But here's the thing. Let me ask this. If you include San Jose, would you include Beckham's Miami? Miami Fusion Redux.
I don't think – I think
– Wait, the Miami Fusion weren't an original anyway.
No, it's so completely different. There's
Fusion came in with Chicago.
Yeah, oh, wow. They're 98.
Wow.
So get out of here, guys.
History lesson for you there.
I had a whole thing going, too.
Another email here from Andrew in Crown Heights. If you were doing a podcast with someone and they had something stuck in their teeth, would you tell them or would you just let them go on without
it? It's an audio-based medium. You didn't have to like that.
My bad, Ben.
TJ Stannard. I'm a Revs fan but new to soccer fandom. Matt Turner seems good, maybe even really good. The center backs seem less good. Can poor center back play permanently ruin a young goalkeeper? How worried should I be?
Not worried? No, I don't think it can permanently ruin a goalkeeper at all. I understand what they're coming from, and I appreciate that line of thinking. But I think, if anything, it's probably good for a young goalkeeper to get that many shots, get that many saves. People just undervalue. This is why you pay a coach, right? It's a coach's job to make them feel valued, to make them feel like they're playing well. You can give up 4 goals, and a coach can still make sure he says something to you to maintain your confidence. Maybe not as high as if you got a shutout. But I appreciate the question, but I don't think it's something they should be overly concerned about. It's good that their young goalkeeper is getting a lot of shots, a lot of tough moments, and a lot of opportunity to grow.
That's a pretty good answer there, Bobby. Greetings from Juan in Frisco. I'd like to know how FC Dallas can be a team that fills their stadium every game like Kansas City and Portland do.
I mean, I think FC Dallas would like to know that too.
Their line of thinking when I had been there is that when they get 11 homegrowns on the field, that place will be packed. And they have 11 Dallas, Frisco, Texas-based players that came through the academy, then that place will be rocking.
They even better though, be winning
even
at the same
though
time.
Their last two homegrowns that they signed
from like
are from Arkansas and Alabama.
And they play as many homegrowns now as they did 5 years ago.
Yeah. Okay.
It's tough. Frisco, I mean.
Let's not act like, first of all, there's no magic bullet here for any of this. So, like, we always have these conversations or people want to talk about attendance and like, be like, well, if they just did this, everything would change. No, it's a combination of a lot of things. It's club culture. It's the way your players connect with your community. It's the investment you put into marketing. It's the investment you put in the squad. It's your success. It's the time of your games. It's your facilities. It's like, it's the sports environment and the entertainment environment. It's how long it takes to drive there. There's just so many things
involved.
Frisco
is not in Dallas, for those who have not been there. Yep. What I will say is they've done a really good job building up the area around there. I mean, Goss goes back there every year. Bobby obviously spent 3 years there. But from 1 year to the next, for me, it just keeps on getting built up around the area. And as more and more people move out from Dallas to areas like Frisco, there's more potential for fans to come in there.
Question for Gasman, Senor Bobby, Ben, and Weeby. They didn't say you guys, so I just added you.
You just added us.
Having a blast watching Busio, Juan Cousin, and Lindsay in the pouring rain. He was in the pouring rain. They were in the pouring rain. He was dry. Have to admit that I never followed the stacked-ish 2016 New York Red Bulls too, as I should have, but looking back now, it's crazy how many of those guys are contributing at MLS level. Long, Adams, Etienne, Davis, Vallot, Mwiel. I don't think we are quite that loaded, but how does this Swole Park Rangers squad compare in hype train metrics and their ceiling, Andy from Kansas City?
Let's go to our resident USL expert. I guess you only do Eastern Conference.
No, I do, everyone. I've covered Swole Park Rangers, but you've watched them at GA Cup. You've watched, like, Busio before.
I'm going to be honest. When we're watching Busio, it's tough with Busio because his team is not as good as him.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, the opposing teams would always focus on him at GA Cup the past 2 years. So
did he play center forward?
No, he played more. He did a couple games. He's played just in a, you know,
he played
free
center
role.
Forward, and we had him this year at
GA
Cup.
He plays a free role as striker. They're clearly focused on him. He had flashes. He had a free kick goal, I think, this year. But I didn't see what he did against Houston as him being capable of that already.
Yeah.
When I've seen the past 2 years at GA Cup. Cousin and Lindsay, we didn't see at GA Cup, so I can't really touch on them other than what we've seen in MLS. But, yeah, I mean, Busio, you see him. He's not a fully grown adult.
Yeah.
So he has all the tools, though.
So Swope, I would say, has brought in a couple of guys in a similar Aaron Long type build of guys who have been around the lower divisions or drafted and then trying to develop them. And right now they've had trouble breaking those guys through to that next level. And I think Long's just a crazy exception. I don't think we're going to see that very often.
You look at Belmar, he's scoring a ton of goals for Park, right. Troll Park for the past couple of years. Can't break through with the first right. team. He got like a couple minutes this year.
And Didich at center back and a couple other guys. And like, it's hard, I think, to find those pieces, but it's also hard because SKC has a pretty solidified lineup, like front to back. There aren't a ton of spots to fill in. I think that's why it's worked out for Lindsay that he's been able to fill a hole, because otherwise you've got veterans at almost every position throughout that team, and you've got a logjam up top.
Sporting KC right now, not to twist it off the question, but I think that question can be answered in large part by the fact that, like, when you hear about players either coming back from overseas, young players, or talented players outside of MLS Academy zones, watch what teams they choose. Watch where they decide to go, an environment, opportunities. What I like right now is Peter Vermees is giving these young guys a chance, which, you know, he did with Beisler at one point, he did with Espinoza at one point, he did with Zusi at a certain point. But you can take a lot from where players choose to go when their free will is involved. Look at Sporting KC's roster right now. It is stacked. They're killing it.
I love that you brought this up, because we have to touch on these guys leaving, too. Soto just left RSL. Ledesma left RSL. Weston McKinney skipped Dallas, right? Why is part of the reason that they're leaving? Opportunity, man. These top prospects are coming through the system, and they're not getting played to the first team. Why are these guys choosing SKC? Because Peter Vermees has proven that he will play them. So there's a big question.
Shallowy would be a big one on that
yeah,
side of
big,
it. Yeah,
there's a big question. How do we not lose these players? You freaking play them, right? If they feel like they've got a legitimate pathway to your first team to succeed and then go off to new clubs, then they will stay. But if we continue to have these elite prospects sign and then sit on the bench...
Does USL change that for you? Or teams having, like... A USL team?
Yeah. Listen, USL has come a long way, but why would I sign a USL contract and play for Swope Park Rangers' second team when Bayer Leverkusen wants to sign me and I can play for Bayer's second team?
Right.
The difference between the two is I think that you, as a prospect, might look at Bayer and say, I can go through there and have that opportunity at the first team level. I think the USL contracts are fine. I think it's improving. But what has to be at the end of the tunnel for that player and their development path are those first team opportunities. So if they sit back and they say, I see all the guys you signed for USL team. I see that none of them made the jump to your MLS team. Mm-hmm. And even the young ones that didn't get to play. Then I start to question that pathway.
Right.
And that's where MLS teams have to clarify it a little bit for themselves, but also for the representation, for the parents, for the players that are going to enter that pathway and say, this is my best opportunity. Not only do I need to get to play at a high level, but I need to have the faith that if I'm good enough, you will put yours on the line and your success and your all these different things that you have to do to play a young player and take that chance.
Yeah, and we talk a lot about how do young players get more playing time, and I feel like I've been pretty stringent on the fact that they're just not good enough, right? We can't say play them because they deserve it, or you really do need a set of incentives that are outside just pure results and winning and losing. This is them. This is the inflection point. Losing players is what's going to push these coaches to play younger players, because it's not that they're good enough. It's not that they're going to help on the field. It's the fact that in a long-term scheme of things, you need players to come through the pipeline, and if they don't get minutes, you will lose them. So for me, we've been talking about how do we get young players on the field. I think these primes, these elite 17-year-olds leaving, is the inflection point.
Last one here, Spencer Hodap from Seattle with some thoughts on the Sounders. What is the likelihood that the Sounders are a 70% team? That they always operate at 70%, and as the stretch run starts and teams start dipping in their ability, that's how the Sounders start stomping through the regular season.
Well, I don't think they'll stomp through, so that part's out.
Well, they have.
But I like the
they're
well,
like on a 6-game winning streak.
Yeah, but they haven't stomped.
But like, I think that's his point.
Yeah, that's what I was just going to get to. Oh. I think that's the benefit for them is, like, the things that they do well aren't necessarily the things that make you sit back and go 100%. It's the Chad Marshall keeping the back line organized and solid and not giving up stupid chances. It's just good foundational play from Svensson and Ozzie Alonso if he stays healthy. And then it's like difference-making moments every once in a while from the guys up top. Like, one of the nice things we talked about Kendall Waston, not every team has a Chad Marshall. Like, every single set piece that dude is up on is a chance for them to score a goal. And if they can get a goal.
Although he actually hasn't scored that many goals in his career.
I said it's a chance.
I love Ben's face right now. Yeah. He's so sick of it.
I'm just confused by the question a little bit. So you're saying they're at 70% the whole season, right?
Yeah, they never really peak at 100.
I completely disagree with that. Because they're just so – they're like at 20% all the way through July. And then now they're at 70%.
Well, his question is everyone else at 100% at the start of the year?
No, they're at like 50% and then they're going up. I mean, most teams are like they know. They've watched the Sounders do this over the past 3 years, that you have to be the best at the end of the season. Not every team actually can accomplish that, as we're seeing with the Revs and some other teams. But I think most teams are gearing up towards the end of the season as opposed to gearing down. I think, you know, what the Revs went through at the start of the season with Frito coming in, changing everything over, a lot of intensity at the beginning of the year. Maybe that's dealt with in terms of, you know, kind of it falling off over the past couple months. But I think Seattle just starts the season and just – I mean, they're not going to say this, but I think they know they can do this, and they don't know that maybe they can just make up the points in a Western Conference, and they don't need to be at 100% or at firing at all those cylinders over the first 3 or 4 months of the season.
One question before we get out of here. If the Sounders are 70% right now, according to this question, is there really 30% for them to continue on, or is this – 6-game winning streak, the peak of their powers.
Yeah.
Do they have another jump?
Well, no. Yeah. The premise of the question, it's we appreciate the question. And it's
but we reserve the right to twist the questions in any way that we
I just want to point out, but it's no, they weren't trying to go at 70% and just waiting for other teams to falter. They just were missing a lot of players, and at 20% of their capacity, now the players are back and they're at 100% of their capacity.
I don't think they're at 100% either. Because Rudy
so
has,
you, that's
Rudy,
what I'm asking.
No,
they
because
have more
if Rudy has just starts scoring goals in bunches like he did in Mexico, that brings up their potential higher. He hasn't been involved in the way they play a little bit.
And Ladero figured out his movements.
He had one goal against San Jose. That was his biggest goal he scored. His second goal was the fifth goal in a 5-0 rout. Mm-hmm. He has not been that influential in terms of getting on the score sheet so far, even though he's been fine over the course of the last 6 games. Once he starts getting the score sheet, then you could start looking at that team maybe a little bit higher potential.
Can I adjust something Ben said? I don't think that they don't worry about the first part of the year knowing they can make up points. I would just adjust that to say they don't stress when it goes poorly, which makes their hole bigger in their locker room, that they're okay knowing that they can make up points.
So it's
not that they're coasting just waiting for the second half of the year. Yeah. It's that they don't panic, which essentially digs their own hole deeper. They maintain their confidence knowing they can come back.
That's better.
Going for 7 straight wins are the Sounders on Sunday. Heineken Rivalry Week, the nightcap there, 9:30 p.m. Eastern on FS1. Red Bulls DC United earlier that day from Red Bull Arena at 7, also on FS1. Wednesday, Extra Time Live, driven by Continental, 6:30 p.m. Eastern. Facebook, Twitter, MLSsoccer.com, all the MLS channels. We will be there getting interviews on the field, talking to the fans, Dave in his happy place. The game is at 7 p.m. Eastern on FS1.
Dave is not going to be at his happy place, for the record.
Back and forth.
'Cause he'd be at Yankee Stadium.
Yeah, but I'm in the Bronx, baby. Just right across the river from Harlem. Home sweet home.
Oh, man. Thursday, Houston, Dallas, 9 Eastern. Uni Mas, live on Twitter for free. Watch it there. Friday, Orlando, Atlanta. LA, LAFC, both on ESPN. And then Saturday, Toronto, Montreal, Colorado, RSL. All the listings, all the news, everything you need to follow Major League Soccer at MLSsoccer.com. Thanks for hanging with us on this Monday. We'll see you later this week.